Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 329. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com, strolling over to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowisogay. And of course, go on over to that Facebook, like us, because we sure as heck like you. So let me pull back the curtain a little bit about what goes on here at This Show Is So Gay. I have this unwritten rule that I do not have guests on more than once a year. And normally that's because we like to diversify our talent and we want you guys to hear from different guests. In one case, though, I have people on once a year because that's as much as I can handle it. And that is the case with this week's guest, Dick and Dwayne. Dick and Dwayne are my favoriteest comedy duo out there. They got their start as the late night after show for the Chippendales Dancers in New York, doing a 1960s style faux lounge act. Eventually, they established themselves in the performance art and alternative comedy world of New York City's Lower East Side before moving on up to more mainstream venues, including headlining at comedy clubs from New York to Tokyo and at all these major gay events. Along the way, they starred in their own theatrical shows. They were hired as performers and writers for the long-running USA Network TV show Up All Night, and they've created several television pilots. And now, after I take a deep breath and get myself ready to hit the edit button, they are back here with us. Dick and Dwayne, welcome back for your 42nd triumphant appearance on This Show Is So Gay. Welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you, Ken.
Well, thank you. Listen, we decided tonight we're going to take it nice and easy, okay? Because we never do nothing
Thank you, Tina. But, you know, Ken, I have to tell you, Dwayne is not going to get over this anytime soon, what you said to us before the show.
I have no idea what you're talking about. As far as gay radio goes, nothing happens off the air, so prove it.
It was the thing about how you said that we intimidate you.
I did say, listeners, I did say that normally I talk to Dick and Dwayne when there's a sun out, that's S-U-N, when the sun is out. It's different talking to them at night. I think you guys are more in your element at night, right?
Yeah, we are. That's why we told you to push it later.
Okay. Yeah. All right. It's either static or growling. You listeners decide for yourself. We have so much ground to cover. It's actually been over a year because that's how much time I need between your appearances. We have so much ground to cover. Are you boys ready?
Yeah. Yes.
All right. Well, let's just start generally, and we'll do a little self-appreciation here, and you guys can do it for each other. Richie, tell our listening audience, what makes Dwayne funny?
Me.
Okay.
That was a joke, sweetie. Heart, honey, baby. What is he staring at me like that?
Is it camera one or two I'm supposed to look into? My reaction shot.
What makes Dwayne funny? Dwayne he's full of surprises. Like, he will say things that you'd never expected him to say, or he's able to do impressions that you wouldn't have thought he could do. You know, I don't know. He's just 35 years, and he's got constantly keeping me on my toes, so.
Nice.
That's my answer.
I feel like it would only be fair to say, Dwayne, what makes Richie funny?
Wow. Yeah. You know what? He's just a naturally funny person. He makes me laugh. I don't know if I can say what it is. His wit, his sarcasm, my sap. I don't know. It's you know what? He's funny. That's it.
Okay. Yeah. Now, I did a little bit of research, stuff that we have not talked about previously on your other 42 appearances. So let's do a little true or false. Dwayne, true or false, you were voted Mr. Congeniality in high school.
Yeah, that's true. How the hell did you get that?
I know things. I know people. I'm from Jersey, guys. I can get this info.
Damn. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you got it.
Okay.
Ken, have you been around when Dwayne's been taking Ambien?
You know, does he do funny things on Ambien?
Yes, we need to discuss that. Yes, he does. Yes.
Okay, so while Dwayne was voted Mr. Congeniality, Richie, what were you voted in high school?
Who gets spit on, I guess.
That's a whole page in the yearbook.
There's a lot of spit to go around.
And there you go. Listeners, thanks for tuning into this week's episode. Next week, we'll have more appropriate answers. Well, there you go. Okay.
Sorry.
Question number two. Dwayne,
yes.
Is this true? True or false? You once sat on Andy Warhol's lap.
Yeah, this is, where the hell are you getting this information from? Yeah, this is true. This is true. Yeah.
Tell us the context when you sat on Andy Warhol's lap.
Well, I was a teenager, and I was going to Studio 54, and there were two drag queens named Kevin and Arthur.
Okay.
Who sort of fell in love with me, and they said, "Oh, you look just like a little Andy Warhol. You've got to meet him." So they took me upstairs to the private lounge where, you know, the stars go.
Right.
They didn't want to do those things that they wanted to do. And, they brought me up there and introduced me to him and sat me down on his lap and said, "Here's little Andy Warhol." And,
well, why is that? Because how did you look?
I think I had similar hair.
Okay.
At that time. Yeah. To him.
So did you discuss anything? I mean, I've never heard actually any details about this.
I can't remember. I can't remember.
Were you starstruck?
I kind of was. It was, you know, so much was going on. I think Liza was up there too, and Halsey was there. And there was a lot of people up there, and I was like, "Oh my God, what am I doing here?" Yeah, and I really probably shut down and became like shy and silent.
Oh, you?
Yeah, silent. Yeah, that's shocking. Yeah, no.
Do you think there's an equivalent of that? Because I sit here and I think, oh my gosh, you were at Studio 54, and there's a degree to which I can't even wrap my mind around it. Is there a similar experience, or is that just a once-in-a-lifetime thing?
No, I think it's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. It's just something that happened at that time.
Yeah.
Nightlife was what it was at that time, and it never was the same after that. New York City has always had great nightlife, but that was its peak, I think. And then it sort of just rambled on since then.
Let's put it this way. If someone were to take you right now and put you on, you know, Kanye West's lap, I don't think it would be the same.
What the hell am I doing here?
Yes. And I did call him Kanye, yes.
Unless there's Ambien, in which case it would be amazing.
Oh, can I tell you about these Ambien things?
Yes.
I'll save it. I know you're doing your question and answer thing.
That's okay. No, this is, it's pretty free form. We get to just talk. Tell us about Dwayne on Ambien.
Yeah, he's been singing and telling stories that he hadn't thought about since he was a child. It's been fascinating. It's been really fascinating. And
wow.
Sexual. Yeah.
There you go.
I am not aware of it, but it has tapped into a part of my mind that I consciously am not aware of.
The other night, he did a moon medley. I don't know where that came from. He did Fly Me to the Moon, Moon River, Shine on Harvest Moon, and Paper Moon. And I didn't even know he knew the words to any of those songs.
Wow.
To begin with.
I don't think I know him now.
And doing Vegas-y like medleys.
Wow. He's like a lounge singer on Ambien.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not allowed to do Ambien anymore.
What happened?
I was dating someone and I took Ambien, and the next morning he said, "I just want to thank you so much. The way that you bared your soul in that way and what you shared took real bravery." And then I had to do that thing where I had to, you know, not admit that I didn't know what I said. So I said, "Well, you know, let me just, you know, work on our communication. Tell me what you heard." So that's another conversation. I have more questions for you guys. I shared things, apparently. Now, Richie, yeah. I somehow made it through life until today without watching you two do your Gloria number.
Wow.
Oh. Oh,
what'd you think?
For listeners who watch how I'm not going to answer that question, for listeners who have not seen the two of you do your Gloria number, and we're sure as heck going to link to it, what will they see?
You have to know the song Gloria by Laura Branigan.
Yes.
It was huge when we first met. And we act out the words of the song as if it were like an off-Broadway play. And that came about because we were in the car one day making out, as we did when we were teenagers, and the song came on and we just both started acting out the song because the words were so ridiculous and it sounded to us like it was dialogue. And then years later, we just started doing it on stage and audiences loved it.
Now, I read that that's not a number you do anymore because you can't make your voices do what you did then.
yeah, we've been through menopause, so it's,
yes.
We can't do the. We could do it again, but we would have to do it as, you know, Gloria and Billie Jean, the later years.
The later years.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. The Maude, the B. Arthur years, because, yeah, we can't. We croak. Yeah.
Okay. You know, I was listening to your past appearances on the show. It's amazing the things that we didn't talk about. I'm also amazed at some of the things we did talk about, but that's a whole different story. We haven't even talked about, like, career highlights, things that just get you jazzed when you think about them. Richie, when you think about what you guys have done on stage, what's one thing that jumps out at you? Like, holy cow, look what we did there.
You don't like me to say, like, dirty things on your show, do you? I'm going to have to think of a way to put this. Oh, I guess it would be Dwayne... for the Fleshlight while I sang Sometimes When We Touch.
Huh.
That's his reaction. Huh. Yeah, because that to me was it was a very Carol Burnett show kind of thing, but in a sexual way, and I thought that was like the ultimate Dick and Dwayne piece. It was fun.
I'm sorry. I love that you described it in that way and then said it was a very Carol Burnett thing to do, which in that moment I was having a hard time putting those together, but I see that it could make sense if you're on Ambien. I don't know. I love it.
Do you want me to reveal that?
No. What?
Some of the sexual things you've been doing on Ambien?
This is a family show.
It's a family show. Family gay show. Dwayne, what about for you? What's one of those times that you were on stage, perhaps with props and maybe not in the Carol Burnett tradition, that jump out at you like, yay, look what we did?
Again, how do I word this? Mock?
He's not. You're not allowed to say that on his show.
Let me back up. Okay. I mock Richie in front of lots of gay men.
Was there a context here, or
career highlight, honey.
Or was this just Tuesday? Is this?
Yeah, we've done that not on stage as well.
Right. No, this was.
Why was that?
This because what we did was we took comedy to its base level, smut.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, and we did it as smutty as you can possibly be, so I feel like it was like completely, what's the word? What's the word? You take something apart. You
are you sure that we're at our best at night? I don't know about that.
I now want Dwayne to make the comparison that you did and say, "Oh yeah, it was an act in the tradition of Edie Gourmet." It's just gonna be something random.
We love Stephen Edie.
We deconstructed that piece down to its base level. Let me put it that way.
Gotcha. Okay? All right.
Vein of Laverne and Shirley.
Yes. Well, of course. That's what they did in the opening credits, I'm sure. I don't know. I don't think so. You know, one of my favorite things to talk to you guys about, and I know that you have very strong opinions on this, particularly Richie.
What?
Talk to me about New York City and how you're feeling about New York City these days. Obviously, you have a long history with New York City, and so as things change, it sometimes is difficult to see some of our landmarks change, and I get to live through your eyes and see your posts about New York City, and I still get the impression you're not super thrilled with the direction New York City has gone.
No, long-time New Yorkers are. And what was the great analogy we saw the other day, Dwayne? Someone said it's like, we're walking around shell shock, like we've been dropped down into a drug dealer's apartment where everything is brand new and
completely renovated.
I mean, this city is unrecognizable anymore. And actually, in just the last 2 days, we lost two more great old mom and pop establishments, the Market Diner and Empire Szechuan Chinese Restaurant. I mean, I don't even know what's left anymore because of all the rezoning that Bloomberg started. They've just wanted the city to be nothing but high-rise glass towers and completely soulless. It's very hard to live here knowing how wonderful it once was, what a vibrant city it once was. I mean, for the younger people that are here, they don't know the difference. So,
and what the city is becoming is a city where its appeal is the view from your high-rise glass tower.
Right.
Not experiencing life on the ground, because there's not much down here anymore.
What about the gay scene there? Do we still feel that there is a scene to be had?
Oh, yeah. The New York will always have a gay scene. It's just, you know, you're going to have another generation come in that loves what the city is right now, because they don't have something to compare it to. So they're going to just march right on and, you know.
But yeah. The gay scene seems druggier and draggier than it was when we were younger and going out in the city. It seems like we didn't need drugs to have a great time because the people were just more interesting and exciting and the times were.
Yeah, and people interacting with each other more now.
It seems like every young person we know that goes out, like, not every, but most, they need to get high in order to have a good time when they go out. And if they don't get high, then they'd say, oh, I really couldn't have a good time because I wasn't high.
Right.
So,
A bummer. A bummer.
Yeah, it is.
Plus, I can't even wrap my mind around, like, I always think, oh, I'm going to move back to New York City. I can't even wrap my mind around how I could possibly in any way afford to move back to New York City.
That's the thing.
No.
I know.
No, you couldn't.
Yeah.
You couldn't.
Yeah.
I know when we were younger, we switched apartments so often because it was just, there was such a plethora of cheap apartments and it seemed like we would get bored. And so, okay, let's move again and just look in the Village Voice and find another cheap apartment. And that's completely gone.
Yeah. All right.
Do that.
All right. Well,
sorry, Ken.
That's okay. You know, I what I'm hearing you say is to move in with you guys. I accept. I will be there soon. All good. But first, But first, before I move in with you guys, I of course do have a bone to pick with you, Richie, and we have to work through it before we live together amicably. Are you ready?
Yes.
Do you know the bone that I have to pick with you?
No, I'm scared.
So one of the things that you are often critical about there on your Facebook page are, and this even pushes the bounds of, you know, acceptable topics for even me. So I'm going to push it a little bit, but this is my bone to pick with you, is that you are sometimes critical of men in gym locker rooms using towels. Is that correct?
Yes.
Bingo.
We're actually critical to them, to their faces.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Why does that bother you?
I think for me, and I can only speak for me, but I will speak for both me and all gay men everywhere, so many of us just had so many different body image issues and weren't super comfortable in the locker room. That was certainly the case for me. And even being comfortable with my body now and having fitness be a pretty core piece of my life, it's still that idea of not having a towel in a locker room makes me uncomfortable.
Well, okay, that's you personally, and I'm sure there were always people like that.
Yeah.
But right now it seems like it's the majority, and we've been going to gyms for decades, and years ago you never saw anyone do that.
What we're talking about is slipping in and out of your underwear with a towel wrapped around you.
Right? Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. I don't know if it's necessarily a body image thing, because some of these guys are very fit. So I don't know where the fear or the shame is coming from. So, and it's not like other people are ogling them and making them uncomfortable. I don't see any of that going on either. So I don't know. It seems like it's a generational thing because they were raised with more shame than we were.
Yeah.
And also that stranger danger that starts with kids and, you know, and I assume that gets embedded into the psyche.
Perhaps if you weren't wearing t-shirts that actually said stranger danger, people would be more comfortable. Just putting that out there.
Just drop the towel already. Just drop the towel.
And on that note, fine, I will move in with you guys. All right, we worked through that issue. So this is...
All right, good. No towels.
Right. I don't know if we can fit four people on our bed, though.
You two people and a cat. I hear what you're saying. We'll stick to that for right now. Hey, one of the funny things that you did, and I will tip my hand and tip your hand as well and say that it's funny, even though people didn't really get it. Some people didn't really get it. You chose to do a little bit of satire, a little bit of farce using the GoFundMe site. Did you not?
Yes, we did.
What did you do? Because we actually, I don't know if you know this, we actually talked about this a year and a half ago when you guys were on the show and just how frustrating it was for people to just even put out there on Facebook, hey, pray for me today, and not really have any substance behind it. And then you guys took that to the next level and this proliferation of GoFundMe sites for people to raise money for, you know, because the sun came out.
Right. Well, we particularly thought it was amusing that there are, like, people who are in web series or they're porn stars or quote-unquote stars or just internet celebrities, you know, whether they're Facebook famous or YouTube or whatever, utilizing their fame and because they're attractive to get their, fans to give them money or to buy them gifts on Amazon.com. And I noticed that I was tapping into something because a lot of people were kind of disgusted by this new phenomenon. And so we created that to poke fun at it, kind of gently, I thought, because all that really consisted was a picture of ourselves, and we stripped it down to its, you know, base element. We just said, give us money because we're hot, which I thought basically is the message of most of those other GoFundMe accounts, but they sort of, you know, they tack on a little sob story or something, you know, I need the money for whatever, but basically it's give me money because I'm hot. So
we're not talking about the people who genuinely have an issue.
Right.
It's
right. The people, if they have medical bills or they lost their home or those are, you know, genuine.
Those are valid.
Right.
Yeah.
But we were making fun of the ones who obviously have means. They have thriving careers or whatever, or they just want money because they look good. Most people got the joke. Most people appreciated it and thought it was pretty funny. Some people even gave us money, which I thought was even funnier. Some people got very angry and they thought we were being very egotistical. And they said, oh, they're so typical gay muscle queens. And they
shallow.
They're shallow and they think they deserve money because they're hot, which we thought that was even funnier. I mean, we loved the angry responses we got from it. It was just too delicious.
What are you going to do with the money that you have raised?
We're going to give it to charity. We haven't decided what.
Probably. Oh, really? Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah. We're gonna go with an animal charity.
Nice. Okay.
We love animals.
Yes,
we
you do.
Didn't expect anyone to give us any money. I mean, I have to tell you. Also, it's $60. So, which is funny to me. I mean, that's also part of the statement. I mean, if we had, I think, come up with some sort of sob story, like, woe is us, we need such and such for whatever reason, I think people would have given money. But because we were, I think, honest about it and just said, we want money because we're hot. Well, not honest, because we don't really think that. But then, of course, no one gave money because there was nothing to feel sorry for us about.
There you go. There you go. Well, what are you guys working on these days? What's coming up for you? Before we play our game, because I have a fun game for you, but what should we be looking out for?
Making as many people angry at us as we can.
Okay. Okay. I think all fans of Carol Burnett and Edie Gourmet, we're well on our way with just this episode.
You know, you're in a comedy club. You either get them laughing or you get them hating you. It's both gold. That's comedy gold.
No, it's funny because there were a couple of porn actors who got very angry at us and started posting things on Facebook that we were creating a smear campaign against them or we were doing these vicious attacks. And like, oh, honey, that's all you can say to that.
Oh, honey.
Oh, honey.
It's not about you unless you want to make it about you. And
yeah. I think we've told you before we wanted to make a web series, but we could never figure out exactly what we wanted it to be and whether we wanted it to be pornographic or not. And we're finally in the stages of actually shooting it and working on it.
Yeah, finally.
So that's what's coming up next.
Nice. Well, when are we looking out for that? And are you going to do a GoFundMe campaign for it?
You know, we just might. In a few months. I don't have a target date.
Okay. Yeah. Now, one thing that came up between your last appearance on this show, which was over a year and a half ago, and now, is that one individual that we hosted on this show is someone that you have a lot of opinions about, and that would be Angelo Garcia, singer formerly of Menudo.
Yes.
That's all I have for an intro. I don't know that I can say more because I usually am very positive and supportive of my guests, and I'm nervous that if I say more, this is going to go awry.
I'll tell you this. We love to make fun of Angie and his karaoke videos, and I think it's the most popular thing I ever post on Facebook because when I do share his videos, it gets, you know, hundreds of comments, most of them scathing, but I have to give him credit because I'm sure he knows about this, and he doesn't do anything about it. He doesn't write any angry posts about me, and, you know what I mean? He just sort of seems to take it in stride, and he just keeps going because he seems to have faith in what he's doing. I mean, we certainly don't appreciate it, but I mean, good for him. I mean, he's got faith in himself, and that's what it takes. I mean, that's what I've learned from that GoFundMe thing.
Yeah, after the GoFundMe joke. We both got a new respect for Angelo, and because, you know, he, what did you say? He stays
true to himself.
Yeah, yeah. He believes in himself. He believes in what he's doing, and he stays above the fray. I guess that's
yeah.
the thing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still going to continue to make fun, and I still find him kind of a ridiculous figure, but I have respect for him now.
Yeah. What do we think it means that he has, and at the time of recording this show, I'm looking right now, he has 828,344 people liking his Facebook page. That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
It is a lot of people.
I've noticed a lot of the people that make fun of him also liked his page.
Okay.
I mean, people click like because they want to be able to keep following. I think like has, just like the word friend, I think like has taken on a new meaning. I don't think it necessarily means that they like him, but they like to watch.
Right.
Maybe as a guilty pleasure. I think he has a lot of female fans that think that, you know, they might have a chance with him. So who knows?
He seems to have really entrenched himself these days in Spanish language songs.
Yeah, I think that's a some sort of... And I'm not appreciating as much because I don't know the song.
Right.
I was really able to make fun more easily when it was songs that I knew and loved and he was destroying.
Yeah.
So these Mexican songs, I don't know what to do about it.
Well, I am very open about how karmically having him on the show bit me in the ass, but that's okay. It's all good.
You can't blame me for that. I didn't tell you to do it.
I did it of my own volition. I thought there would be a payoff, and there wasn't.
Yeah.
There you
that
go.
That was wrong.
Yeah. I learned actually a very valuable lesson there. I'm not sure what it is, but I think that I learned something. I do want a little bit of credit. I definitely name-dropped you two in my interview with him.
I know you do, and there was the awkward silence afterward was beautiful.
I live for that awkward silence on gay radio. It's good times.
We felt it.
Oh, good. All right. Yeah. Well, I put together a game for you all. This is a new game that I am calling Dick, Dwayne, or Don. All of the answers to these questions will either be Dick, Dwayne, or Don. So as you guys have done before, one of you will answer this set of six questions, the other one will leave the room, and then the other person will come back, and we'll see how many you can match together. All of the answers will be either Dick, Dwayne, or Don. If you get 5 out of 6 right, then you win. I had to make it a little bit harder, because you guys have won in the past, and we need to up the ante a little bit.
Oh, no. Okay, who leaves first?
Do you want me to leave?
All right. Dwayne's leaving first.
Dwayne is leaving first. He is going into the isolation booth.
I'm actually going to put earplugs in because I don't want to hear. I want
to... Honey, just go in the room.
Right.
Just speed it up. Come on. Come on. Keep going.
This is my favorite part of you two being on the show, is this part when we transition to one person leaving the room.
That's when the realness comes out.
I love
it. All right, he's in the bathroom.
All right, Richie. You ready? So... Keep in mind, all of your answers are either Dick, Dwayne, or Don. I would also like to remind you that it's maybe not necessarily about getting the right answer, but what you think that Dwayne is going to say.
Okay. Okay, we have to match.
You have to match. It's not about getting it right. You got to match. All right. Question number one. Who is the best dancer, Dick, Dwayne, or Don?
Dwayne. No, wait a minute. Okay. Dwayne.
Glad we talked you down from that ledge. Okay. Who is the messiest in the house? Dick, Dwayne, or Don? And by the way, oh my gosh, how are we not pausing here? Tell everybody who Don is.
Don is our cat. She's an Egyptian Mau. And she, we were not cat people before. I hated cats my whole life. I learned that hatred from my mother. But she arrived and she's taken over our life and people love her and we love her and there she is.
There you go. Okay. Question two, who is the messiest in the house, Dick, Dwayne, or Don?
Dick.
Okay. Question number.
I think people might be surprised at.
We'll see if Dwayne is surprised by that. That's the important piece.
Okay.
Question number 3, whose upkeep is the most expensive, Dick, Dwayne, or Don? I know it's not so easy, this 42nd appearance on our show.
Who's upkeep? I'm going to go with Dwayne,
okay.
Yes.
All right. Question number four. Who has the highest IQ? Dick, Dwayne, or Don?
Don.
Okay. Notice how after you said Don, you didn't say, I think people would be surprised by that one. So that's significant. Okay. Question number five. Who usually gets their way the most? Dick, Dwayne, or Don?
Dick. Wait.
Who usually gets Don, their way the most?
Can there be a tie?
No. Hit me. Try me.
I think Dick and Don are tied there.
Okay, we'll see. Sometimes he gets them right. You guys have matched some really random questions before, so I'm not ruling that out. I'm not ruling that out. Okay, and finally, question number six. Who attracts the most men? Dick, Dwayne, or Don?
Who attracts or who gets? Let's see. It's attracts.
It is attracts.
I'm going to say Dwayne.
Okay.
But he doesn't do anything about it.
He doesn't know half the time. He's on Ambien. All right. Can we get Dwayne out of the isolation booth?
All right. Hold on a second. Dwayne, get out of the bathroom. Come on. You're not supposed to be sitting on the toilet. People should just be...
Thanks. It gave me time to trim my mustache.
Oh, good. I hope that's not a euphemism.
No. Literally.
So for our listening audience, this is the part of the show that we build on trust. We all as a community trust that Dick is not giving Dwayne the answers. And that is true, correct, Richie?
Yes.
Okay.
Anyway.
Okay.
Even if I tried.
I know. Now, I am going to give you a slight hint. This might mess things up, but we'll see. One of the answers was a tie. So I'm just telling you that one of the answers... there was a tie. But except for that question, all of the rest of the questions, the answer is either Dick, Dwayne, or Don. So as I reminded your partner there, it might not necessarily be what the correct answer is, but what he thought you were going to say. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Question number one.
Okay.
Question number one. Who did Richie say was the best dancer? Dick, Dwayne, or Don?
Dwayne.
That is the correct answer. Very good. Very good. One down. Question number two. Who is the messiest in the house? Dick, Dwayne, or Don?
Dick.
That is the correct answer. This is very good. Okay. Question number three. Whose upkeep is the most expensive? Dick, Dwayne, or Don?
All right. Give me a second on this one.
Whose upkeep is the most expensive? And let me know if you need us to define any of the terms.
Whose?
Is. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to go with Dwayne.
That is the correct answer. Very good. Oh, my gosh. It's almost like you guys have been together for a while. All right. Question number four. Who has the highest IQ? Dick, Dwayne, or Don?
Oh, that's easy. Don.
That is the correct answer.
Am I right? Keep peace in the family, but...
Do we feel like this show brings you two closer together? Because I think it does.
I think it does.
Okay.
It does.
All right, you're
that's
welcome.
That's why we needed it. That's
okay.
Why I begged you to have us back on.
Yes, he's cheaper than counseling. All right, here we go. Question number five. Who usually gets their way the most? Dick, Dwayne, or Don?
I can tell you who doesn't, so... this is the tie. It's between Dick and Don. Because I can't choose. They both...
That is the correct answer. It was indeed a tie between Dick and Don. There you go. Very good. For a clean sweep... A clean sweep, 6 out of 6, but you've already won the magnets. So for 6 out of 6, who attracts the most men, Dick, Dwayne, or Don?
I think Don does.
You know, I actually thought that's what you were going to say for this question. Sadly, though, Richie said Dwayne.
Oh.
But you're not aware of it.
I'm not aware.
Yeah.
Everyone who comes over, every guy who comes over wants to meet Dawn.
I'm not even going to ask how many guys that is, because that's not the point of this show. Not the point of the show.
But every guy who used to come over to meet me would say, oh, are you sure you can't get him to come join us? Are you sure he doesn't want to No, he doesn't want to join us. He wants to cook dinner.
And that concludes this week's episode of Dick, Dwayne, or Dawn. You guys won! Well done.
Yeah.
Well done.
Got it.
This show is so gay. That's going to be our new tagline. This show is so gay, cheaper than counseling.
It really is. No, I was going to say, you know, Dawn really is the smartest, because she came to the roof years ago, and she decided she wanted to live here and not live next door anymore, and here she is.
And there she is. I love it.
Yep.
I love it. Now, tell everyone, all of our listening audience, where they should go to follow all the cool things that you're doing.
Oh, go to Facebook. Dick and Dwayne, you'll put a link, I guess, right?
Of course. You guys have to know at this point. I mean, this is just, there's no question about it. You guys know that I adore you, right?
Yes, and it's mutual. And not just because I fantasize about your Lycra bicycle shorts.
And on that note, listeners, please tune in to the next appearance of Dick and Dwayne on This Show Is So Gay in 2017. Dick and Dwayne, always a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you, Ken. Same here.
Yeah.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we have some time left on this week's episode, so let's get to the latest LGBT news that's out there in the world. For the past couple weeks, I've been covering what's been going on in Houston, Texas with the HERO Ordinance, and the HERO Ordinance is the Houston Equal Rights Ordinance. And we've been covering the story that anti-hero people who don't want this ordinance to pass have been using fear-mongering tactics in order to defeat this ordinance. I've been a little bit blasé about it because it's just been, hey, there's no way fear-mongering still works. As it turns out, fear-mongering, it still works. The election was this week, and activists are stunned after the Houston Equal Rights Ordinance failed with voters by a wide margin. It really wasn't that close as far as elections go. The ordinance had banned discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, gender identity, and 11 other characteristics in employment, housing, and public accommodation. But anti-LGBT forces rallied, including the lieutenant governor, who we covered last week, and a veteran anti-gay activist doctor from Houston. They all worked to repeal the measure, which passed the city council in 2014. With about 95% of the votes counted, the ordinance was losing 61% to 39%. That really is quite a large margin. The opposition painted the law as a bathroom bill, and they preyed on the fears of transgender people, all the fears about transgender people, claiming that men would invade women's restrooms to assault them. Such behavior has never been reported as a result of a trans-inclusive equal rights ordinance. And Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, he said in a video, Proposition 1 is not about equality, that's already the law. It's about letting men in women's locker rooms and bathrooms. And again, for the past couple weeks as we've been covering the story, it's just been a little bit scoffy, a little bit blasé, because it was just decrying, hey, I can't believe that people are still using fear-mongering tactics. Unfortunately, they work. On the other side of the fight, from Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, there was public support from President Obama, Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders. It also got the backing of nearly 60 companies, including Apple, General Electric, Hewlett-Packard, BASF, and EMC. And it's a blow specifically to Houston's out mayor, Anise Parker. She had pressed for the law and was then sued when its detractors pushed to get the repeal placed on the ballot. The Texas Supreme Court ruled in July that Houston officials either had to repeal HERO or put it up for a vote by the public. And this week, after the election, Anise Parker gave a press conference, and she called out that really horrible tactic that sometimes happens when we put individuals' rights up for a public vote. That has never been the history of our country, something that works out. We don't put individual rights up for a public vote. And Anise Parker made it personal and said, my rights were put up for a public vote, and this did not work out. Human Rights Campaign President Chad Griffin noted that Houston becomes the largest American city without protection from discrimination for LGBT citizens, and he warned that opponents of equality will try to expand on their success in other parts of the country. Chad Griffin said this, quote, "It's almost unbelievable that this could happen in a city like Houston, but make no mistake, if we don't double down today, we'll face the same thing again and again in cities across the nation." The coalition formed to fight for the ordinance, Houston Unites, said this week that they would press to have it restored. The group said this in a statement, quote, "We are gravely disappointed that for now, Houstonians will continue to be denied critical local protections against discrimination. Tonight is not the end." So we can't just sit here as I did, and holy cow, am I experiencing enormous amounts of regret right now that I've covered this story and talked about it in such a casual way, like, oh my gosh, look at those opponents using their fear-mongering techniques. Look at those opponents casting this civil rights ordinance, this ordinance meant to guarantee protections for my LGBT brothers and sisters. They've cast it in such a light to only talk about bathrooms. That's not going to work. That's so ridiculous that we're still using those tactics. The ordinance failed 61% to 39%. And it's not just this ordinance. You have to imagine that opponents of these bills across the country have now received encouragement just by virtue of looking what happened in Houston. Those fear-mongering techniques will be used again and again, and they just got encouragement, the opponents of these bills, to do this, to attack these bills in this way, in such an incorrect and horrible way. As I've been covering for the past couple of weeks, there has never been a case. There has never been a case of some sort of malfeasance, some sort of something untoward happening in a bathroom as a result of one of these bills. And as proponents of HERO have pointed out again and again and again over the past couple months, that's not something that's intended to happen here. And there are laws on the books that if something untoward happened in a bathroom, if something illegal happened in a bathroom, there are already laws on the books that state that those individuals will be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. This is not what this bill was about. This bill was about providing protections. And unfortunately, 61% to 39%, that's a huge, huge margin as far as these bills go. And yeah, encouragement for opponents all across the country. Now, there are some effects that this might have. Houston might actually see some backlash here. Houston attorney John LaRue, who ran for the Houston City Council and led a campaign to support HERO, he told ABC News this week that though supporters were still in shell shock, there are rumblings of boycotts and other next steps. He said this, quote, "The Super Bowl is slated to come to Houston in 2017, and there are rumblings of plans to ask the NFL to move and go elsewhere in support of LGBT people and other groups HERO would have protected. I also talked to some people last night, and we're planning to create a voluntary system and group made up of people who, while not obligated by City Hall, will still choose to enforce HERO's protections in their businesses." And there are all these pictures, if you haven't seen the pictures, of just signs, "Vote no on Houston's Proposition 1, no men in women's bathrooms." It's so nutty. It's so nutty that that works, and yet, holy cow, it works. Conservative groups, mainly led by religious leaders, launched this effort to repeal HERO, mainly through emotional ads under that slogan, "No men in women's bathrooms," suggesting that allowing trans people to use the sex-specific bathroom reflecting their gender identity would allow sexual predators to camp out in women's restrooms. And it worked. And it worked. Gosh, terrible, terrible news. And if that's not a reminder that there's more going on out there other than marriage equality, we cannot be complacent. We can in no way be complacent. Yay, Supreme Court passed marriage equality. Yes, the Supreme Court passed marriage equality. And yet in Houston, we're using these fear-mongering tactics and they're being used effectively. There is so much more going on. We have to shed light when conservative folks say really nutty things. Here's another one. Conservative radio talk show host Pastor Kevin Swanson, he's been proselytizing about the company that is destroying America. And that company, according to Pastor Kevin Swanson, is, of course, Disney. He said this, quote, "If I was the devil, what would I do to really foul up an entire social system and do something really, really, really evil to 5-, 6-, and 7-year-olds and Christian families around America? I would buy Disney." And he said that Disney, this week, he said Disney is one of the most pro-homosexual organizations in the country. At the top of his list of overwhelming evidence, you ready for this, is the movie Frozen. Frozen. Overwhelming evidence that Disney is one of the most pro-homosexual organizations in the country, the movie Frozen. Apparently, Frozen contains hidden messaging, according to Pastor Kevin Swanson, that indoctrinates little girls into becoming, yes, that's right, lesbians. While he didn't give specifics, he did talk at length about how terrible it is that parents took their kids to see a movie without knowing that they would turn into lesbians. He said this quote, "I wonder if people are thinking, you know, I think this cute little movie is going to indoctrinate my five-year-old to be a lesbian or treat homosexuality or bestiality in a light sort of way. I wonder if the average parent going to see Frozen is thinking that way. I wonder if they are just walking in and saying, yeah, let's get my five-year-old and seven-year-old indoctrinated early. You know they're not. I think for the most part they're oblivious. Maybe they do pick up on pieces of it, but they just don't get up and walk out." But apparently, yeah, they should have gotten up and walked out because Frozen indoctrinates 5-, 6-, and 7-year-olds into being lesbians. So why should we care about Pastor Kevin Swanson? Because Pastor Kevin Swanson is hosting the National Religious Liberties Conference next week in Iowa. Three presidential candidates will be speaking, Ted Cruz, Bobby Jindal, and Mike Huckabee. Pastor Kevin Swanson is not nobody. He actually has some clout in some circles, and this is a guy who thinks the movie Frozen indoctrinates 5-, 6-, and 7-year-olds into being lesbians. So there you go. I've watched Frozen a few times, but I guess I'm not a 5-, 6-, or 7-year-old girl. Otherwise, I would be a lesbian. These people have power, folks. These people absolutely have power. More drama with the film Stonewall. Stonewall, directed by openly gay director Roland Emmerich, portrays the events of the 1969 Stonewall riot in New York City, where NYPD clashed with gay youth at the Stonewall Inn in Greenwich Village. The event is often marked as the beginning of the gay activist movement in the United States, and accordingly, the film's tagline is, quote, "Where Pride Began." Well, apparently, it's not going to go over well at Colorado College. According to the school newspaper, The Catalyst, there at Colorado College, while the film was scheduled to be shown October 21st, it was postponed after 9 people dubbing themselves radical Against Institutional Damage, RAID, and by the way, I love good acronyms, that's a good one, Radicals Against Institutional Damage, they sent a letter to administrators to protest. They argued in their letter, quote, "The film is discursively violent. In a world where cisgender white gay people have finally achieved marriage equality and many see the struggle as being over, this film is reinforcing a hierarchy of oppression to invent someone who never existed and place them in a historically based film with the express purpose of silencing more marginalized groups." I have to tell you all, I could not agree more. I could not agree more. The school's film department tried to defend itself by saying that simply showing this film did not imply an endorsement of all of its content, and they said that the film would be accompanied by an opportunity for critical discussion of the content. But students in this organization said the explanation is not acceptable, and they demanded an immediate cancellation on the grounds that the film could somehow lead to genuine violence against transgender individuals. Student Amelia Ascani told The Catalyst this quote, "I think Colorado College should cancel the screening because of the safety and well-being of queer and trans students surpasses the importance of a critical discussion." Another student, Grace Montesano, said the decision to show the film exposed Colorado College's bigotry. She said this quote, "If Colorado College is really as dedicated to diversity and inclusion, they would never have agreed to screen a film that queer students have repeatedly stated is a threat to our identity and our safety." Further, RAID, that group, again, great acronym, said this quote, "Inevitably, some students will have the burden of informing other students, as well as staff and faculty, about the problematic aspects of the film. The conversation will yet again put queer students in the position of having to teach to justify the validity of our feelings, which is emotionally draining, difficult, and frankly, not our job." I am so inspired by these students. I love students who get involved in activism. I love students who raise up their voice and say, yeah, I know that you're just doing a movie night, and I know that maybe you're going to have a talk back afterwards, but cancel the frickin' movie. This is a movie that posits, really, that some Midwestern white cisgender male, who, by the way, the director, Roland Emmerich, has said that he cast him because he was straight acting and thus would appeal to straight audiences, it casts this Midwestern white cisgender male as really the individual who threw the first brick. and almost completely ignores the fact that it was trans women of color who really stood up to the police. Trans women of color. Kudos to that organization at Colorado College. In comic book news, and oh my gosh, do I always love comic book news. For the past 52 years, Iceman has been a stalwart member of the X-Men, and for all of those years, he's been living in a closet. Iceman, otherwise known as Bobby Drake, is one of the team's powerhouses. He's one of the original members of the X-Men. The X-Men count on him. His sense of humor has made him a major fan favorite. And on Wednesday, November 4th, he came out as a gay man in the pages of Uncanny X-Men number 600. The editorial move makes one of Marvel's most iconic and high-profile heroes a gay man, which is a testament, holy cow, is this a testament to Marvel's ongoing mission to include more diversity and make sure its comic books reflect the real world. But Iceman's coming out is also an homage to the X-Men's legacy. The X-Men story, and boy do I agree with this because I grew up reading the X-Men story has always and will always be imbued with the fight for civil rights. Iceman's sexuality and where he goes from here is just the latest chapter. Iceman's coming out is actually the end of a complicated story and the end of writer Brian Michael Bendis' run on the X-Men. Bendis has long been one of Marvel's top writers, and in 2012 he introduced the idea of bringing the original X-Men back to the present day. In Uncanny X-Men number 600, younger Iceman confronts his older self, because there are two Icemen, don't ask questions, just go with it, and he asks him all about his sexual orientation. What the readers find out is that Iceman has been living in a closet for his entire life and just shut that part of himself off to the world and to his teammates. There is no nature versus nurture situation, no time-traveling hitch. Older Iceman just didn't want to be persecuted and judged for another part of his life. His coming out is as touching as it is quirky and awkward, and you have to read it to check it out. Now, is this a big deal? Yes, this is a huge deal. The comic book industry is just a multi-billion dollar industry, and it reaches so many segments of this population that other media don't reach. And yes, there is a huge, huge established affinity for LGBT youth with the X-Men. These are superheroes who are persecuted against for being different. That's the whole narrative of the X-Men. I can tell you, just speaking from the eye, always good to speak from the eye, they made a huge difference for me. And I saw myself in those pages. So to have one of the five original X-Men come out as being gay, this is going to make a world of difference. I promise you that. There's an amazing post that you should go check out. It's Gay Guys React to Racist Grindr Profiles. I'm all about talking about the intersectionality between any number of different populations, and this one has various different gay men reacting to racism in Grindr profiles. You can find it on YouTube. Just search Gay Guys React to Racist Grindr Profiles. It's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. In athletic news, when the NHL brought on You Can Play as an official partner in the spring of 2013, the hope was that the league's first openly gay player wasn't far behind. 2.5 years later, we are still waiting for the first openly gay ice hockey player. Patrick Burke, the co-founder of You Can Play, said this week, quote, "It's surprising. We felt that the work the league was doing, the culture that the league had, the way our guys responded not just to our initiative, but to the LGBT community in general, I think we thought for sure by now there would be an out player in the NHL." He then added, quote, "I don't want to say it's disappointing because everyone is on their own timeline, and when the first guy is ready, he's going to do it." For those of you who follow hockey, if there was any remaining doubt about whether there were gay NHL players, Burke said You Can Play has heard from gay players in the league. He said, quote, "Look, we denied it for several years because we didn't want players to feel pressure. We didn't want to kick off a witch hunt. We didn't want people trying to guess who was who. But yes, our organization has spoken with gay players in the National Hockey League, gay staff members, gay media members. If we could coordinate everyone we know in professional sports, not just hockey, to come out all at once, it would be world-changing overnight. But for a variety of different reasons, there are men and women who still don't think it's the right decision for them to come out at this time." So, a variety of reasons that people don't come out. And I will just say this as a closing story. Apparently, one of the reasons that people don't come out is because of me. What? What's that? Yeah, apparently Ken Schneck, who wields a poison pen, can prevent people from coming out. I had said a few weeks ago I wasn't going to talk about this Danny Pintaro story anymore, but it oddly keeps going. And so I wrote a piece just to catch you up in the Huffington Post a few weeks ago that went viral to a degree that I really wasn't anticipating. So I had no idea it was going to be like that, and it went a little nutty, but I believe every single thing that I wrote. Of course, I always believe everything that I write. Sometimes I pull punches a little bit because I want to make it more palatable, but I always stand by what I write. And in that one, I stand by the fact that Danny Pintaro, who came out of the closet as being HIV positive about a month and a half ago, did it in a really not well-researched way that actually, I think, created more stigma around people identifying as HIV positive. Well, now, the latest piece is from Joel Goldman, who's the managing director of the Elizabeth Taylor AIDS Foundation, who, in full disclosure, just signed Danny Pintaro on to be one of their ambassadors. Well, he penned a piece called No Room for Friendly Fire. No Room for Friendly Fire. And he said this quote, "I applaud Danny Pintaro's bravery to share his story. We need to respect people's narratives. I've always said that I went on the lecture circuit to make my infection mean something. Members of the HIV community have told me privately that infection does not apply to all of us who are HIV positive." Right? So I support all that. I said in my piece, I applaud Danny Pintaro's bravery. So here's where he keeps going. "As proud as I am of Danny for being vulnerable," and this is from Joel Goldman, "as proud as I am of Danny for being vulnerable, I am equally appalled at the response from many within the HIV community. We seem to have no problem pointing our fingers at Cameron Burr and Raven Simone for shaming Danny on The View, but what about the three fingers pointing back at us? As many HIV activists and thought leaders," and apparently that's me, "publicly ripped Danny's story apart, it was clear that Danny was not ready or prepared to answer certain personal questions that were thrown to him by journalists or talk show hosts, questions that journalists and bloggers who regularly cover HIV and AIDS would know not to ask. But once he answered them unprepared and on the spot, out came the critics and haters from inside our own community." He then said this, "I know three famous faces, two actors and a TV personality, that have been thinking about coming out publicly with their HIV status. I was hoping that Danny had inspired them to speak out, but the internal hate," so he's talking about pieces like mine, "the internal hate, critique, and judgment that came after from within the HIV community has put a halt on that, hopefully only temporarily." So he is saying that individuals were going to come out and now they are not going to because we were critical of Danny Pintaro. First of all, being critical should not be coded as hate. That is not that at all. Second, and way more importantly, if we cannot be critical of each other, we will stall out. If there were individuals who were not coming out of the closet because me and maybe two other people wrote pieces that said, "Hey, you look unprepared," then those individuals are not prepared to come out into a homophobic society that will say way worse things than anything I could have written. If you can't handle what I wrote, and I did it out of support, I did it out of saying, "Hey, we need to stop here and consider our message because it can do damage," then there's no way you're going to be able to handle the horrible, horrible things that conservative, evangelical, homophobic people will post about you and write about you. So just because it comes from a gay person does not make it gay on gay hate. I think that we have to be critical of each other. We have to. And this is the piece that kills me. He wrote at the end of his piece, Joel Goldman, quote, "We need to watch our temper. And although uniting in anger, thank you, ACT UP, has tremendously progressed a collective response to HIV and AIDS, in 2015, I think we can redefine why we are united." So he is saying we need to temper ourselves. I'm calling BS on that. It is such an insult to all of us who have a brain. How dare then a member of the gay community say you should not be speaking out in critique of another member of the LGBT community? That's a silencing that's just completely nutty to me. I don't get it. I absolutely don't get it. So that's it. Our huge thanks to Dick and Dwayne. Oh, how I love having them on the show. Go check them out on Facebook. You go out there and do whatever it is that you do to make a difference for your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. Get out there and do it. And while you're out there making a difference, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?